Tonight in Arkansas, there's a mother tucking in her daughter and turning off the light. A business owner is burning the midnight oil. An at-home dinner date is plating up possibility. And it's all happening under one roof. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one John from Integrity Solutions had with First Horizon Bank about his vision for a sustainable mixed-use building. Now it's not just words, it's life. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/John. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
It's time to face the music. It's your day in court with a people's lawyer, Bruce Hagan, and attorney Ray Giudice.
Your day in court with renowned lawyers Bruce Hagan and Ray Giudice on Extra 106.3. My name is Tug Cowart. I always want you to know how to get a hold of these guys if you need them, and we're going to talk about that in a second, and then we're going to brag on both of them because both of them have done some pretty cool stuff in their time, and Bruce just did something very cool this week, as a matter of fact. But, Bruce, how do folks get a hold of you?
I'm trying to think which cool thing you're referring to because there have been several, but, yes, easy to get a hold of me. My cell phone number is 404-202-2233. Check out our website, hagen-law.com. That's hagen-law.com. Or shoot me an email, bruce@hagen-law.com. Always happy to help you. We got a call from a listener last week who had an issue that was interesting and that it was not something that I could help him with. But what I was able to do was connect him to somebody who was truly an expert in that field. It was just worthwhile to be able to know that I'm helping this listener to get to the best legal services that I could find for them. It's somebody that I would have gone to if I had the same problem that they had.
I love that. That's exactly why we do the show right here. So thank you so much for listening and thank you for calling in. Ray, how do folks get a hold of you?
Well, first of all, let me say I did do a cool thing last Saturday night. We were at the 680 The Fan Casino.
Right. Man, that was so much fun.
That was fantastic.
Last weekend.
What was this going on with those cars? What was the name of
that place? Motor Cars of Atlanta.
Fantastic.
Lamborghinis. They had Rolls Royce, Maseratis, and Lotus.
You know, I kind of felt like James Bond until about 9:45, and then I felt like, you know, just Bond.
James Bond wasn't ready for bed by 9:45.
He was leaving the suite at the penthouse to go gamble at 9:45. 404-964-4185 is my cell. It's been my cell for many, many years, and will stay that way. RayGiudiceLaw.com. We're here in Roswell, but working in all the courts all over the state of Georgia.
This guy's like globetrotting lately, Ray. He's been to Vegas. He went out there.
Couldn't make it to the
casino, not because he was at real Vegas. He was at a real casino. You know, Ray and I were, you know, playing with Monopoly money, and you're out there with the real stuff. But the other day, you got to speak to the Georgia State Law School.
Yeah, it's great. And for the last few years, I've had the privilege of being able to speak to the first year torts class. And for those of you who don't know, tort law is basically what I do every day. It's personal injury. It's negligence. That's tort law. And so, you know, here are these wide-eyed first semester law students who are unsure of what the future holds in store for them. And it's a great opportunity for them to hear from somebody who's been practicing in this area for more than 30 years. Some interesting things come up because, you know, the professor wants me to tell them about my career arc and how things went, and then to, you know, give some measure of advice, but then of course field questions about different things. And some of it is the stuff they don't teach you in law school about marketing and that sort of thing. But the questions that kept coming up were not just sort of what is the grind of becoming a successful lawyer, but how can I do this and still maintain work-life balance? What is it like to raise children while you're also working at a law firm? They're great questions, right? And they're valid questions. But they also reveal, I think, a completely different attitude than what existed when Ray and I came out of law school and, you know, when we were looking for jobs, which was more like, I'm prepared to put my life on the line and sacrifice everything I have in order to become a partner at whatever law firm it is that we're trying to get hired by. And that's clearly not the attitude now. I think it's a healthier attitude. I just don't know that it's one that is going to provide the sort of intense training that I think you need in the early stages of your career in order to get the technical skills that you need to be the best lawyer you can be and competent at your craft. Even though once you've established those skills, if you want to say, well, you know what, I'm only going to work 32 weeks out of the year and I'm going to take 20 weeks off, you could probably work that out if that's the lifestyle you want to choose. So it was just kind of revealing that this sort of different mindset. And I think it's prevalent pretty much everywhere, way beyond just the practice of law. But it was interesting to hear it from law students.
Yeah, I mean, I started law school in the fall of 1982. So, you know, just to put it in context how long ago that was. In Emory Law School at the time, in the lobby of the law school, everybody's grades were posted by Social Security number. So you knew where you stood. It was cutthroat. People before the computer cut the important cases out of the law books. People competed for jobs. They badmouthed each other. I liked it. It was competitive. Hey, it takes pressure to make a diamond, baby.
It does.
And so it's a whole different world. I mean, when my class of 85 got out, you started at some of these law firms at 2,000 to 2,200 billable hours a month, okay? That's how hard you were working. You went in every Saturday. You brought the donuts on Saturday. You got there before the partners did, and you didn't leave there until you were damn sure the partner's Mercedes was way down the road and they weren't doubling back to see who left early. It was just part of it. That there was no work-life balance. Yeah, after 6:30, 7 o'clock, you left, you had cocktails, you went home, you passed out, you got up, rinse and repeat. You know, it wasn't that healthy, but it made you good. You know, how many jails have I been to on a Sunday morning, and emergency preliminary hearings and bond hearings? And Bruce, how many accident scenes and emergency calls have you dealt with over the weekend? And I think that 10,000-hour rule, that intensity, as Bruce talks about, what residents in the medical profession go through, and they talk about their 80-hour weeks. Yeah, that's right. That's what it takes. I'm sorry. Yeah. That's just what it takes.
And yeah, you're talking about Malcolm Gladwell and the 10,000 hours.
The practice.
I'm sure none of the law students in today's world are familiar with the movie The Paper Chase, but it was a great movie with Sir John Houseman was the Harvard law professor, you know, with his baritone voice and English accent telling the new students, look to your left, look to your right. At the end of this year, one of those people will no longer be here.
And even better, when I forgot who the protagonist of the story is, doesn't really want to answer the question, and Houseman says, sir, here is a dime. Call your mother and have her come pick you up. You are not fit.
Yeah. No, it was, okay. it was brutal.
It was brutal.
But and you know, the expectation when Ray and I were coming out of law school was if you could get hired on by a firm, you would bust your tail for 7 years, and at the end of those 7 years, you would become a partner in that law firm. The law firms marketed themselves that way, that opportunity was there for you, and the students were interested in it. You know, what is your partnership track? Right? Nobody cares about that anymore. The law firms don't even offer it like that. The students don't want it. They don't ask for it. It's just a much different mindset, and I'm not saying it's so bad. So here's an example. One of my good friends, in fact, my roommate for 3 years in law school, he's my age, right? So that means he's now old enough that he's the managing partner at his firm of 1,100 lawyers. And he just gripes to me about, you know, the young generation. And to some extent, it's us, like, you know, when I was a kid, I walked 8 miles to school in the snow and we liked it. But at the same time, he's also in the dilemma where here he's at a point in his career when he should be focused on being the rainmaker who brings in business, mentors young lawyers, who is keeping the clients happy and satisfied, whatever, and is at the top of the heap, right? But instead of that, he tells me he's working more hours than he's ever worked before in terms of the substantive work that has to get done in these cases, because he doesn't have the younger lawyers who are competent to do it, and he can't trust them to do it.
A few years ago, I hired a young associate, a lawyer, very, very nice young man, very smart. After a few weeks, I noticed he had missed consecutive Fridays in a row. And I said, is everything okay? And he said he was a Florida State football fan, and he traveled with the team. He went to every game, and he was going to block off every Friday for the college season. I said to him, no, you don't understand. That's what the partner does, okay? You just don't have that much of a, I need you here on Friday so I can go.
That's right.
You follow the team.
Yeah.
And he was a really good lawyer, and it was better that he went to create his own. That's fine. I got no problem with it, but it doesn't fit within the typical legal corporate structure of the pyramid, you know, where there's the lots of young associates at the bottom of the pyramid working lots of hours and late nights and also pushing each other. Competition is not that bad a thing.
No, it's actually really a good thing.
You know, if you've got 10 young lawyers and they know that only 3 of them are going to make partner, well, it's better than all 10 of them think they're going to get a little trophy.
And, you know, the funny thing, so I spent 6 years working at law firms at the start of my career, and I learned a lot. It was clear that lifestyle was just not going to work for me, and I really knew that I couldn't sustain it working for other people. It was just never going to happen. Never had a problem with clients or making clients happy, but the idea of sort of having to, like you're talking about, you know, just sort of make appearances to keep the partners happy, that was never something that was going to work for
me. But we were also financially motivated. So I taught for about 6 years after graduation at Emory Law School as an adjunct professor in litigation for a 3-hour Monday night seminar from 6 to 9, which, you know, nowadays I can't physically do. I've taught at John Marshall Law School. I've taught at Georgia Tech as a pre-law. And I start off every semester or quarter with the same question. I say, everyone in here who thinks that To Kill a Mockingbird is what the legal practice is about and what you would like to do if you were a lawyer. Raise your hand. And they all have their hands there, except a couple, and said, none of you with your hands up are going to make any money because right. you're going to get emotionally involved in a case that squanders your practice, and you may get paid in apple pies, and everyone will pat you on the back, but at the end of the day, you didn't make no money. And that's, unfortunately, we are driven as a capitalist society, and we sell quality legal services. That's what I do. I'm a business person who sells legal services.
I was driven by the desire to live and to support a family. Mm-hmm. And when I left the last firm I worked for, it was 1992, so it's been 30 years. I had $250 saved up to launch my move. I had an 18-year-old child who was apparently hungry, but I was hungrier, and I knew I couldn't fail. That was not an option. And so it led to, you know, doing everything that had to be done to make it work. And it wasn't that I left the big firm with their 2,000-hour billable hour requirements because I wanted to work less.
Yeah.
I worked harder. It was 24/7, and it still is. And by the way, that 18-month-old baby is now into his eighth year of being a lawyer, working at the firm, and he's crushing it.
And you're making him work 20 hours.
And he's crushing it.
Yeah, that's exactly. Look, that's what it's all about, being able to pass it down and do better than your parents did, right?
I will also say, though, I do think that there is our generation and even more so the generation beforehand, probably we should have had a little more balance in our life. Too many divorces, too much drug abuse, alcohol abuse, substance abuse in a sense of how else do you get rid of the stress at the end of the day or on the weekends, and not enough taking care of your kids. So I do think there's a balance. So I am not totally disrespectful of that. Of these questions that you got, except I don't think you heard enough questions on the other end. Is like, how do I build a successful practice? How do I get to the Supreme Court? You know, I don't want my heart surgeon to have a really good tan because he or she is spending a lot of time at the beach or on their boat. I want them taking the latest classes and the Da Vinci procedure, and I want them in surgeries so they're sharp as a tack when I need that, you know, that thing I'm going to have.
Experience has real value, and that's why you go to lawyers like Bruce Hagan and Ray Giudice. When we continue, the aftershocks of the massive earthquake in the trillion-dollar crypto industry continued this week. FTX. We'll discuss that next on Extra 106.3. This is Your Day in Court.
A lifetime of hard work, children laughing in the kitchen, family photos on a restaurant wall, a legacy that lives on. It all comes from the power of a conversation, like the one Tommy Hall had with First Horizon Bank about taking over his father's Charleston-based restaurant business. Now the table is set for a whole new generation. First Horizon Bank, let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/Tommy. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
This is Your Day in Court with Bruce Hagan and Ray Giudice on Extra 106.3.
Welcome back to Your Day in Court on Extra 106.3 with renowned lawyers Bruce Hagan and Ray Giudice. My name is Tug Cowart. Thank you for listening. If you have anything that you would like us to touch on, any topics you would like, reach out to us. Do you guys want to hit really quick your social media handles in case somebody wants to reach out to you that way?
Yeah, really. It's at Peeps Lawyer on Twitter and Instagram. Twitter's a great way to communicate. So until at least Elon Musk manages to completely destroy it. But for the time being, at least, it's a great way. I do not have a blue check mark, nor will I pay $8 a month to have one.
That's right.
He did buy it with his own money, right? I mean, he can do what he wants.
Yeah, there's no Saudi money.
Okay, that's what I'm getting at.
That's right.
RayGiudiceLaw.com. I think, you know, just call me on the cell. I can't do it anymore. I sent you a message on Twitter. What yeah. am I looking at my Twitter account for a legal question? I'm not. All right.
Let me just say
email
this.
Me call me on the phone or meet me for coffee. Yes, I'm old. I'll have a newspaper at the coffee shop.
Anybody right? who wants to reach me, just slide into my DMs. It's fine.
I don't know if I don't know if I like this sound of that.
Seriously. Yeah, seriously, that's the difference, right? That could be misconstrued with a guy that doesn't know. I get it.
I got slapped last time I tried to do that.
That's right.
I'm not even 100% certain I know what that means.
Yeah. It literally just means send you a message. That's all it is. Usually it's some sort of romantic type of way, but we'll leave that there.
You hear about, you know, Antonio Brown is in trouble for somebody slid into his DMs.
Yeah.
That's how it all starts.
That's where the downfall happens. Absolutely right. You can hit me at Tug Coward. I'm easy to find there, too. We would love to cover anything that you want to discuss. Well, we'll do this segment, the collapse of FTX Global. It is a cryptocurrency, and it recently had moved its headquarters from Hong Kong to the Bahamas. The former CEO, Sam Bankman-Fried, hailing it as one of the few places to set up a comprehensive framework for crypto at the time. So this thing has affected everyone from celebrities to people who you would not know who they are, regular everyday folks.
You know, this is going to be an octopus where the tentacles are going to reach into so many areas of both the financial world, the legal world, the regulations and securities commissions. I'm sure Senator Warren will now have another committee. And instead of berating, as she has for the last 4 years, Jamie Dimon and other of our American bankers about overdraft fees, now it'll be about crypto, because that's on, she read it on the headlines, or one of her young helpers said, hey, Senator, there's a crypto problem. Well, what is crypto? You know, and all of a sudden we'll have regulation where there should have been. So here we got the latest Ponzi scheme, basically what it is. You know, I watch a lot of the financial news channels, both CNBC and Bloomberg. I watch how even the smart cats fall in love with these tech bros. You know, they're all got their little black t-shirt on, and they won't comb their hair, and they won't look into the camera because they're smarter than everybody. And you can't possibly understand how blockchain and crypto are going to change the world, because you're tied to bullion and, you know, the exchange of shells, okay? And so they make you feel stupid. And so they've backed millions of people into buying crypto because of the failure to be left behind. You know, I don't want to be the idiot at the law firm Christmas party who doesn't have half their portfolio in crypto. Instead, I've got, you know, Coca-Cola and, you know, Intel and some stocks where I actually get a dividend and can retire on.
Well, and FOMO certainly is part of the factor that's driven
first,
investment.
Well, hang on. But first, also, slide into your DMs now, FOMO.
Ray, let me just slow it down for you. Fear of missing out.
I said
FOMO.
That.
Okay, but that's not it. It's also people are looking around and seeing these insane returns on, I'm going to put this in air quotes, investment. When you put your money into crypto, your money that went in, that's real money. What the crypto is an illusion in a lot of ways, right? It's something. But what really is it? Like, as Ray wants to be able to hold it in his hands. And you can't hold it in your hands. And so, you know, this...
Can you describe for the audience what I've just
it's
laid
a
out?
Wad of it's dollar a wad bills. Where have
and,
you been?
When what can I do with this? I can go across the street and buy a hamburger or have somebody change the tires on my car.
Here's what you can't do. You can't go to a Falcons game and
I know.
Use that to buy food or to buy a shirt because they don't take it.
I don't like that.
This was kind of interesting. As you mentioned, I was out in Las Vegas this past weekend, and my daughter had a great bet for me to put down on the Formula One race, of all things. Believe it or not, you can bet Formula One races. And sure enough, she picked the winner. It was not Max Verstappen. She picked the winner of the race. And so I came back, and I gave her winnings in cash. And she looked at it like I was handing her
like a dead animal,
a pile of dog poop. It's like, what is this?
Can't you
just Venmo me this money? Because this cash doesn't seem real to me. I need Venmo where it's real. She didn't know how to use the cash.
How did AJ Foyt do in that race? Did he finish? AJ Foyt.
I don't think
AJ
so.
AJ Foyt. Yeah. You know, he didn't have enough STP in his engine.
That's
Mario Andretti.
Right.
Anyway, so getting back to this FTX thing, you know, we've known this to be the wild, wild west of investing. That's beyond the reach of taxing authorities, which has made it so attractive to so many people that nobody can track my money. Nobody knows what I have. I'm not going to have to pay taxes on it. There's no or 1099 at the end of the year. There's no regulation, right? We've talked about this before with some of the issues for celebrities and billionaires promoting various cryptocurrencies and what kind of potential liability they may have. this now that, you know, here's this massive $16 billion exchange for cryptocurrency seeking the protections of U.S. bankruptcy law, which Ray brings up is an unusual thing for a Bahamas company to do. This is the sort of thing that could absolutely end, not just with all this pain being distributed society-wide, but could lead to some serious regulation. And you know, it may be that the heyday of crypto is over because of this, because now governments may look at it and say, we can't have this significant investment out here be just subject to the whims of some crazy lunatic who is commingling, apparently, the investor money with the company money. You know, I mean, if there's going to be criminal repercussions from this, that's what it's going to be based on, is that this guy was taking, you know, the Cowart family cryptocurrency investment fund and using it either to pay the staff on his yacht or to run his business, either one of which is wrong.
And this is the classic financial problem with what's called leverage or margin or being short on a stock. It sounds great until you get the call from the broker, your stockbroker, that you got to cover your short call or you got to cover your margin. And now you've got to scramble. It gets a lot of lawyers in trouble. There are a lot of lawyers in the history of the practice that have had to go into their client's escrow account, and this is where lawyers lose their license to practice, to cover some personal expense that they didn't think was going to happen, or a gambling bet, or the horses all had to go to the vet at the same time. And this is what happened to this guy, Sam Fried Bankman. You know, he was into it for billions, and then all of a sudden there was basically a run on the bank, his bank, and he had to start shifting money to steal from Peter to pay Paul, and eventually you run out of money. And now the big problem I think he's got, both criminally as well as bankruptcy court, is number one, where is the money? He's out there making statements and giving interviews that sound like, I guess if I had just been paying a little more attention, I kind of lost focus. Man, I haven't lost focus of $13 billion yet, you know what I'm saying? And I have a thought you just laid out very clearly, that there is U.S. federal bankruptcy law potential protection. But by filing there, does he submit himself to the jurisdiction of our criminal courts?
Well, yeah, very likely. Courts. And there are even... There are things called bankruptcy crimes.
Yeah. Oh, you can commit fraud.
Yeah, you can commit fraud in the bankruptcy.
Well, you can't use bankruptcy to cover up a crime.
Right.
So
in fact, it's more likely to expose the crime.
The applicant. Well,
because now you're going to have trustees digging in, and the trustee, there's a lot of confusion when it comes to bankruptcy law. But there's a U.S. trustee that is somebody who works for the court, but then there's also trustees that are appointed. So there will be private law firms that are retained working for the trustee that will investigate this thing top to bottom. I mean, there are going to be law firms making a fortune on this, all of which will be paid for out of whatever assets the company has. And it's going to be a gravy train. And what they uncover here is bound to be just awful, right?
Spider's web.
Yeah.
I mean,
they had estimated initially they thought they had something like 100,000 creditors. They've since amended that to say they have over 1 million creditors. What does this mean to you if you are a crypto investor and you used FTX as the crypto exchange for your investment? Other than just being out of luck, you're not necessarily going to lose everything. You may, and at the time being, probably you can't access this. If you wanted to liquidate it, I doubt you can.
Yeah, you can't.
Everything is frozen.
That's right.
But you'll get something. At some point, you'll have an opportunity to make it known that you are a creditor of this bankrupt entity. And that's usually done with a notice that comes in the mail. It's still a very old-fashioned system. You'll get a very formal-looking notice in the mail that comes from the U.S.
Bankruptcy
Court.
It'll scare you when you see it, yeah.
And it's the sort of thing that, by the way, some people will use that format to send you fake solicitations, mm-hmm. things that look like they're real, but they're not. But this will be from the U.S. Bankruptcy Court. There will be a way for you to go online to verify that this came from the U.S. Bankruptcy Court. And it will be an opportunity for you to file something called a proof of claim. And what that means is you're identifying yourself as somebody who is a creditor, identifying the value of how much money you're saying your claim is worth, proving it by showing here's the transfer of, you know, this many this many dollars to purchase this many coins, or however it went. You know, you might have had coins already that you listed here, a screenshot of your last statement, anything. But that's the way that you make your claim known in the bankruptcy court, and then you become one of the creditors, right? There are going to be a lot of creditors, and in this case, you're what's called an unsecured creditor, meaning you're at the bottom of the chain. So if you think about it from an individual standpoint, if a person files for bankruptcy and they own a home that has a mortgage, right, the mortgage is what's called a secured creditor, the mortgage holder is a secured creditor, meaning that the bank that is holding your mortgage has as collateral your home. They're a secured creditor. So you can file bankruptcy, but they can still, they're secured up to the value.
And they
home.
Come at the top or first in the payoff.
There's also judgment creditors who have filed lawsuits and have judgments against the company. They're at a higher echelon. And then even within secured creditors, there's so many different tiers of security, right? But then you get the vast pool of unsecured creditors. So for the homeowner standpoint, that would be like a medical debt or a credit card debt, something like that, where you owe the money, but they don't have any collateral to attach it to. And they're at the lowest priority and are going to get paid out
like
the least.
Like my bar tab. It's not secured.
it's secured, but maybe it should be.
It's secured by Ray's liver. He had to leave that there on deposit. So in the context of this case, there's going to be a massive number of unsecured creditors, but you want to at least be on that list if you're one of the ones who
well,
did
that's
this.
Right. And so I think most folks who had some crypto and maybe had it within a mutual fund or an ETF, they absolutely should file this proof of claim. And my belief is that they're going to get a penny on the dollar or a penny on the crypto, but at least then I believe they'll be able to use it as a capital loss against perhaps capital gains within their portfolio or other investments that they may have made, or perhaps some sort of capital gain set off on in their tax return. But I really think that that's what most of the small buyer or purchasers are going to be looking at.
But think about it too. The other issue there is that now those crypto investors who have not paid taxes on their gains in the crypto market are suddenly, you know, making a sworn filing in bankruptcy court that exposes themselves potentially to audit. So if you paid, you know, you were one of the smart ones, and again, I'm using that in air quotes, but you bought Bitcoin when it was at $1,000 a coin and it went up to 50,000, and you're saying that I lost, you know, I had 10 Bitcoins, and so I lost $5 million. Am I doing the math right? $500,000 on this exchange here, and they're like, hang on a second. You didn't pay taxes on that $490,000. We're going to call it a capital gain, and you're going to be taxed now, and let alone get this back if you're claiming that loss. So it's going to be very ugly and potentially ugly for
a long
time.
And as we always preach, before you file that claim of loss or the claim in the bankruptcy court, perhaps go talk to your CPA or your accountant or your broker and say, look, what is this going to subject me to? Is this worth it for me to do that? As Bruce wisely points out, is there a value here, or am I just angry and I want to have my day in court, which you won't really get, but you know, you'll get it on a piece of paper, because this is going to be, as Bruce points out, between the law firms and the actuarial accountants and the forensic accountants and the technology people, this is going to be years of litigation. And I also think that it really is shameful how I was watching an interview by one of the CNBC analysts or on commentators with Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett. Charlie owns 10% of Berkshire Hathaway. Of course, Buffett owns the rest. Charlie Munger's like 94 years old, and he was just filthy salty about how all this stuff was, you know, not only crap, but he was elaborate about what junk this is.
And the reasons.
And of course, Sam Bankman, whatever, comes on afterwards and says how Charlie Munger, you know, 96 years old and a multi-billionaire, is a fool because he doesn't understand crypto. Right. And it's like, this guy understands crypto, okay? And he knows it's junk. Now, look, there are some people that made money on that. People are entitled to gamble. There's as long as you say, look, it was gambling. I thought it was a hot idea. You know, I made some money. I bought in at 5,000 and I sold at the peak at 64,000 and I bought a farm. God bless you.
Yeah, good job.
God bless you. But it doesn't mean that these people that were the promoters aren't liable.
Well, think about that. Tom Brady, Steph Curry.
Yeah.
Kevin O'Leary. I mean, there's a lot of people.
Jason Bourne.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of those guys are set to lose a whole bunch of money. And you want to talk about getting attention? Names like that help it get
Who's
attention.
Who's the quarterback for the Jaguars, the kid?
Trevor Lawrence.
He took his salary in crypto. Mm-hmm. I mean,
well, and look, the crypto market may still be okay. You don't know. But if you had it with FTX, you got problems. If you have it in Coinbase or something else, does it make you nervous?
The problem. So much of investing, whether it's houses, stocks, is based on confidence and emotional trend. And where crypto was gaining that, I mean, you really had, you know, high-powered folks saying, well, I'm going to put 5%, like I've got 5% of my portfolio in gold, and I'm going to have 5% in crypto. And you were having Morgan Stanley, you know, smart people, Goldman Sachs saying, yeah, we're opening a crypto account. Well, that trickles down to where the average person that's trying to balance their retirement fund or pay for their kids' college says, well, if that smart cat that went to Harvard at Goldman Sachs is putting 5% of his or her money in, why shouldn't I? That's gone. And that support can collapse any stock. I mean, look what just happened to Amazon. It's a great company, right? We all buy stuff from Amazon. It's down 30% in the last, 6 months? Based on what? That they have a couple too many warehouses? Are we all not going to buy from Amazon for Christmas? Of course we are.
They just fired 10,000 people, past week.
And that trickles down to confidence.
Sure. And you know, the flip side of that is the price of Bitcoin has been beaten down, and some people are going to look at that and say, hey, here's an
time
opportunity.
To get in. Yeah.
It's going
to
just back flow to right gambling. Back up again. Right. And so it's just there's no telling behavior, but certainly it does influence a lot of things just outside of there. And you're right. When you see the smart guys on Wall Street doing this, like, well, why am I not doing some of that? So, you know, fortunately, I do my gambling in legal casinos in Las Vegas periodically, sometimes in Murphy, North Carolina, but try to keep it within the budget.
But yeah, it's play money. I mean, that's the way you got it. And I think to some extent in your investment portfolio, you may have a 10 or 15% of, okay, I'm solid here, and I'm going to, you know, have a little more risk, and that's all fine. And that could have been crypto. But if you had all your money in it, or if you had your family fortune tied to it, I mean, I'm reading some of these articles about friends and family of these crypto guys that put everything into it. There's a family that gave up work and sold everything they had and, you know, been living off of it. Well, I don't know how that's going
to
work out.
Back to work.
I mean, let's go back to work.
But
right.
It's not, you know, it's different than the Bernie Madoff scandal in the sense that so much of that was the personal relationships, the real confidence man scheme, right? Here's a guy who's telling you, I'm going to make you this much money. And there was no substance to it, but it's more of an individual thing. And then that same factor Ray's referring to of the people just don't want to be left out. I mean, people were begging Madoff to take their money.
Now, the truth is that much of the Madoff money has been recovered through litigation and the very aggressive trustee appointed by the Madoff bankruptcy court has collected about 80% of the money back.
I don't think many people realize that.
Yeah, and because that was money, though, okay? It went in, it bought something. It bought a piece of art. It bought a piece of land. It went into somebody's account.
Another example, when Lehman Brothers had, you know, their collapse at the peak of the financial crisis in 2008, and, you know, it was, if you paid attention there, it was like the whole ridiculous scandal, these mortgage-backed derivatives,
right.
and how
bundled
everything
up
fell apart. And it was, it was just a scheme that couldn't sustain. But they had on paper $600 billion in assets, but some of those were hard assets, right? And so when they ended up recovering, they recovered about $115 billion of that. So, you know, what is that on a percentage basis? Like 15% of the total, 20%? It's something. It's not great if you're losing 80% of, you know, what you put into it. That's not a good feeling, even with the tax write off. You know, Enron, they sold off the assets of Enron, but they didn't get back the money that, you know, Enron squandered. And so, you know, this one I think is the biggest problem is that underlying it all is this fictitious asset of cryptocurrency. And so if the cryptocurrency market just goes away, there is nothing there.
The only support was other people wanting to buy your crypto.
And the belief that
this
thing has value.
That it would continue to go up.
convincing someone it has value.
This thing we're trading here has value, and when that belief is gone, there's no value.
And
to
as P.T. Barnum said, there's a sucker born every minute.
Well, it's because we're talking about this. Tom Brady, Steph Curry, they're facing a class action law or putting together a class action lawsuit. How does that play? How does that work in the context of everything else?
They'll claim that they were defrauded and deceived, and that they did their due diligence and were lied to, and they'll be plaintiffs suing for damage to their reputations. It's so unlikely that they would be in a position to have any real liability unless you have true promoters liability like we would have. If they were out there telling you to go buy General Motors stock and General Motors stock collapsed, that's a whole different thing. If they're telling you invest in we're launching a bank, invest in this bank and you can be part of this, and then they take the money and keep it, whole different thing, because that's all subject to very tightly defined regulation in the U.S. Federal code. There's none of that here when it comes to crypto. And so it's a question, and we've talked about this, of like, can you apply those laws and principles to this other area of the new world? But it's like the law hasn't caught up to this yet. You know?
It usually takes a while, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's the same reason you can go to the gas station and buy Delta 9 and get as high as you could from smoking weed, but the law hasn't gotten around to regulating Delta 9 yet. It just sort of slipped through a different category.
And as a brief aside, what we're seeing now is what we call the race to the courthouse. So the three of us may have the same injury or the same financial loss from the same bad operator, but I want to get my lawsuit and my claim filed first, and I want to get the first judgment, because going back to what we were talking about, prioritizing judgments and bankruptcy security, I want that judgment first, because if there's any assets out there, I want to grab them before you, who didn't choose a great lawyer, then get down to the courthouse, do your discovery, and get that judgment.
I would do better than that, because I know you two. I know who I would pick up the phone call.
Man, that's a segue, baby.
That's exactly right it is. When we continue on Extra 106.3 and Your Day in Court with Bruce Hagan and Ray Giudice. You've heard about Chrisley Knows Best in the TV show. You know that they had gone to court. They were charged in a federal fraud case. What is going to come of that? We know what the sentencing might be for Todd Chrisley and his wife. Next on Your Day in Court with Bruce Hagan and Ray Giudice here on Extra 106.3.
Tonight in Arkansas, there's a mother tucking in her daughter and turning off the light. A business owner is burning the midnight oil. An at-home dinner date is plating up possibility. And it's all happening under one roof. How? The power of a conversation. Like the one John from Integrity Solutions had with First Horizon Bank about his vision for a sustainable mixed-use building. Now it's not just words, it's life. First Horizon Bank. Let's find a way. Go to firsthorizon.com/John. First Horizon Bank, member FDIC.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
This is Your Day in Court with Bruce Hagan and Ray Giudice on Extra 106.3.
Federal fraud, that's not anything that you want to find yourself being accused of. Todd Chrisley and his wife, however, have been accused of that very thing. They've gone through the trial. Now we're getting to the sentencing. And Ray, the sentencing sounds pretty darn serious. And a lot of times when it's celebrities, you think, oh, they're getting a pass. They're going to get off because of who they are. It is not the case this time.
In June of this year, the federal jury found Mr. and Mrs. Chrisley guilty of federal bank fraud, tax evasion, and obstruction of justice. And nothing gets federal prosecutors and federal judges more aggravated than obstruction of justice. I'm not being facetious here. That is an extra add-on. In federal financial crimes, it really matters how much you took and who the victims are and what did you do with the money. Those are kind of the chief components. Of course, if you have a criminal history and any acts of violence, you know, those are extra added attractions. So the jury convicted both the husband and wife, Mr. and Ms. Chrisley, of all of these crimes. And now you're looking at what is the federal prosecutor, the Justice Department, going to recommend as sentencing guidelines under the guidelines, which are not capital G guidelines anymore. They're more suggestions or a framework of consistency. And it looks like the recommendation for Todd is 22 years in federal prison. And this, and the government's recommendation for what's the wife's name? Is it Julie? Julie Christie is 13 years. It's not a slap on the wrist. Anybody who thinks 22 years of any kind of prison is a light duty is out of their mind. And these folks are middle-aged folks. It's not going to be a happy retirement.
Yeah, and I will confess, for a couple years there, Chrisley Knows Best was one of my guilty pleasures.
Okay,
and
all right.
I spent a little too much time watching it. It was a little bit of hate watching, but I couldn't stop. And so I was, for a brief period, addicted to the Chrisley family. But every single time from the very first episode, it was just in the back of my mind, like, how are these people making money? Like, what did they ever do to get money? And then, you know, you'd hear, oh, Todd's in real estate. I was just like, I know people in real estate, and it's very few of them who live that lifestyle just because they made some money in real estate, okay? There are some, but you know those names because you see it on buildings and you see it everywhere. And I'd never seen Todd Chrisley's name anywhere. It's like they were living this lifestyle, the rich and famous, for no apparent reason and nothing underlying it. And so, of course, you're going to get the attention, you know, when you put it out there like this. And so then the allegations of bank fraud, you know, lying about the value of your assets in order to get bank loans. I mean, that's what Todd Chrisley was convicted of. And his wife was convicted of doing the same. And then, as Ray says, you know, you get caught in this lie. And when your immediate reaction is to do everything you can to hide the lie by obstructing the ability to find out about the lie, committing additional crimes, you're only making a bad situation worse. That would have been the time to lawyer up right away at the first hint that something's going on here, because not that a lawyer is going to facilitate your criminal actions, but they might be able to keep you from making your bad situation worse.
My best legal aid is Donna duct tape. And I have to get Donna duct tape out of the closet every once in a while and shut my client's mouth. And as the great legal philosopher Chris D'Amino says, don't commit a crime while you're committing a crime. So the federal prosecutors will invite you and your counsel to come down. Just come on down, 10 o'clock, Richard Russell Building. We'll meet you up in the conference room. You're going to chat, and you go in there. There's three USAs, U.S. assistant attorneys. There's someone from the Securities and Exchange. There's somebody from the FBI, and they're packing heat. And you're like, wait a second.
This looks different.
I thought I was going to bring something from Entenmann's. We were going to have a little coffee, a little coffee cake, and just talk. As soon as you start talking, you're on the clock for committing more crimes, okay? And these folks did it on TV. And when you do federal bank fraud, your initials and your signatures are all over these documents. It's the problem for the prosecution is, which ones do we show the jury? We have so many good ones, you know? And so, it just becomes, it's a very difficult case to defend, by the way.
So the process in federal court is that the trial was conducted mm-hmm. on the underlying criminal acts. The jury reached a verdict. They found the defendants guilty. Now you have a totally separate event happening, which is the sentencing event. And there's a recommendation that comes from the prosecution that goes to the judge, and that's where they recommended 22 years for Todd, 13 years for Julie. Ray, what does the defense give to the judge to try to they're not going to give something to the judge saying, judge, just give them probation.
Well,
right?
You never know.
Slaps on the wrist,
you would think that, but I'm going to tell you that there's a couple different theories here, and I agree with what you were hinting at, is that I think you're better off coming back and say, look, clients, I know this is a hard pill to swallow, but this judge, especially if you know the judge, and you're supposed to, is not going to give you straight probation. We need to come back with a counterproposal that and be sorrowful, and you have to make an admission sooner or later of doing something wrong. Come back at 48 months. Come back. Now, in federal court, there's not just the amount of time, federal sentencing. It's which facility do you go to? You know, do you go to one of those super? This is not a supermax case, okay? He's not going out there with the terrorists or the mass murderers. But
yeah, but can they bring the reality TV crew into the prison?
That's
with
right.
Them?
That's like,
can we still film our show
right. and
right.
make money and pay it off?
But look, if you've got medical issues, you're going to bring those to the forefront. That we have to have medical. We have to be in a facility where there's treatment or near doctors. If there's family, you can be actually request to be located in a facility near your family. These are not illegitimate requests. The federal system is really big, and there's a lot of moving parts. The other is the more high risk. you go in there and say, no, judge, you know, we're not so sure he did anything wrong. We, you know, we blah, 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 respect the jury's verdict, but we're appealing it at the same time. And if anything, give him straight probation and let him out so we can defend this case and appeal it. Well, you better be right. Because I think if you go that route, you're going to be a whole lot closer. Now, I don't think he's going to get 22 years. My estimate is, let's see, 10 years at a 12-month, 120 months. They tend to do it in months. I don't really know why. 120 months for him and 80 to 90 months, 75 to 80 months for her. They don't have young children that they have that. Remember when Teresa Giudice and Joe Giudice, who people ask me all the time if we're related, yeah. I'm not quite sure. Why did he go to prison first and then she went? Well, they had very young children, and then once he finished his 5 years in federal prison, they deported him back to the old country and they got divorced. So the Chrisleys don't have that, but their lawyer's job is to bring forth what's called mitigation, things for the judge to consider to lessen the sentencing. But they're going to prison, in my opinion.
Yeah, but they got to take care of Nana Fey. I mean, yeah,
Bruce's got all the names. He knows everybody.
Okay, confession. I lived in a high-rise condo building next to Phipps for many years, and their son, they bought a condo in the building for their son. And I met Grandmama, and I met them all in the lobby, and it was always just commotion when they came to the lobby. They had
huge
dogs and luggage and Sherpas and Escalades, but the kid, I'll say, he was a young man in his early 20s, and he was the most polite, nicest young man. He was on the same floor. I will say that every time I got off the elevator, I could smell what I thought was marijuana, but you know, okay. So who hasn't?
How many police reports have you looked at where it's like there was a strong odor of marijuana?
Pungent
odor.
Right,
distinctive.
Exactly. As we close out, if you need expert legal advice, I would recommend that you call Ray or Bruce, and this is how you do it. We'll start with you, Bruce.
Easy to find me. A cell phone number, 404-202-2233. That's 404-202-2233. You can call me anytime. You can email me, Bruce@Hagen-law.com. You can slide into my DMs at Peeps Lawyer on Twitter and Instagram. Give us a follow and a like.
Ray.
404-964-4185. Email is great too. Ray@RayGlaw.com.
That does it for your day in court here on Extra 106.3.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.
Support for Extra 106.3 comes from Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy, celebrating their 35th anniversary and offering gift cards in-store and online. You can discover Mother's Day and anniversary presents online at Natural Body Spa and Skin Remedy at naturalbody.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Beckham with Atlanta Ramjack. We specialize in only foundation repair. What is foundation repair? Foundations sink or settle. These issues need to be addressed. It only becomes more costly the longer you put it off. What is the biggest cause of foundation problem? Either poor construction, inferior site preparation, or weather. Drought causes cracks in your foundations. If you see any signs of foundation issues, please contact us at AtlantaRamjack.com.